Welcome to the CB Wallop Podcast. I'm Phil Lucas.
And I'm Phil Gerrard. Why are we here, Phil?
Well, we are going to talk about the greatest disasters in world history and some you have never heard of. What went wrong, how it went wrong, and whether it was our fault or good old God in the sky's fault.
Awesome. But remember, Phil, it's not our intention to make light of the sometimes quite substantial mortality rates of some of these disasters, is it?
No.
We're just interested in finding out what went wrong. And be honest with yourself, Phil, if it came on the news, I reckon you'd be interested, you dribbling homunculoid.
Sickly produced breaking news is my crack.
What are we banging on about this week?
The Torrey Canyon.
Seven stones reef, immovably aground on that graveyard of ships off Land's End, the Torrey Canyon. Spewed out of her more than 40,000 tons of crude oil, a colossal menace to holiday beaches. Safely ashore to Penzance were brought 32 members of the 61,000-ton tanker's crew. Most of the ship's company are Italians. The captain and three of his men remained aboard. Nobody at this stage could explain how the great vessel came to ground on the rocks. She is equipped with all modern navigational aids. In home waters, no oil menace on anything like this scale has ever occurred. Britain can pat herself on the back, whatever happens, for taking such prompt action to protect the beaches.
So the Torrey Canyon disasters, oil slick,
oil
essentially.
Not done in oil.
Well, I was thinking about oil slicks. They were really big when I was growing up. People used to go down to the beach on the record breakers and news round and clean off the seabirds.
Yes. There was a lot of oily seabirds when we grew up, wasn't there?
It was a big thing in the 80s, oily seabirds. Mm. And I was thinking about this. I've got so many memories of those oily storks flapping about. Very sad. Very, very sad.
Oh, yeah.
But does it just not happen anymore, or I'm just not taking any notes anymore?
I think it does happen. It happens less. Mm. And I think one of the reasons it happens less is because of this disaster.
Oh, really? Is this one of the worst ones?
It was the first.
The worst one is that American one, right? Where it blew up and killed a load of oil rig
We've had
workers.
A few, haven't we? We've had Exxon Valdez was a big one. Yeah. I remember in the 70s there was another big one called Omoco Cadiz.
Oh, yeah.
Then you had the BP.
The BP is the American one.
Where
they made the terrifying film of.
Probably.
It's an amazing film, that, actually, because it's one of those films that starts boring. It's boring in the middle, and then the last 45 minutes is properly anus tighteningly terrifying.
does it have a well-known actor in it?
Oh god, it does. It might be Marky Mark.
Oh dear.
So Phil, the SS Torrey Canyon, what was that?
It was the running aground of the huge oil tanker SS Torrey Canyon off the southwest coast of England, and at the time it was the largest oil tanker ever to be wrecked.
I'm hoping that somewhere within this episode we're going to be likening the size of the SS Torrey Canyon to a number of football pitches.
I have not pre-prepared that.
Oh, Lucas.
But Google is our friend in this scenario.
When did it happen?
The 18th of March, 1967.
Ooh, summer of love. Sort of.
Nearly.
Spring of love. How many people died?
One person and around 25,000 seabirds, along with huge numbers of marine life. What we're talking about, Phil, here is an extreme, and I use that word without the E at the beginning, a big X,
extreme
environmental disaster. Probably the X in a different font.
Before I was born, 1967. Set the scene. What's 1967 to you and me? Nothing.
I'm going to set the scene, Phil. It's 1967 in Britain.
Yep.
The famous summer of love is only 3 to 4 months away. Everyone except Mary Whitehouse was a hippie.
Yeah. Who was the Prime Minister in 1967?
Harold Wilson. And there will be an interesting but hugely unimportant coincidence about that later.
This isn't that you've seen his cock, is it?
No, Edward Heath's is the one I've seen. Oh, the Prime Minister who ousted him in 1970.
Oh, really?
Yes.
It's a shame that you've only got one point on the graph, really, isn't it, with Prime Ministerial cocks?
It is, yeah.
It would be good if
we could
graph.
Chuck a Blair in there. Something a bit more current.
Anywho. Yes, 1967. So yes, a big coincidence later. That's going to be fun.
Now, I'm going to give you some facts. They're good facts. Don't delete any of them in the edit.
Okay.
The Beatles' Sgt. Pepper album will be released this year.
Deleted.
Great.
That
album.
Is one of those things. That's one of the few things in the world where people say, you know, that's one of the greatest albums of all time, and it actually is.
It is, yeah. It's a topper of an album.
It's a brilliant album. Do you know that they were just trying to beat the Beach Boys?
Yeah, they were trying to sort of beat Pet Sounds, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Look at Pet Sounds and go, oh, fucking hell, get your organ out. Have to do some pretty close harmony singing to beat these lads. Fact me two times.
Trumpton was first shown on TV.
Pew, pew, Barney McGrew, Cuthbert, Dibble, Grub.
That's the one. Milton Keynes was formally designated as a new town.
I like Milton Keynes.
I do. Gets a bad rap.
Fat me three times.
Non-league footballer Tony Alden died after being struck by lightning on the pitch.
Is this well known?
No, I don't think so.
Is there footage of it?
I don't know. That wasn't my initial thought. Can I watch it?
When you read that a man got struck by lightning playing football, your first instinct wasn't to go on YouTube that.
I do not want to see footage of people in precarious and precious moments.
Well, that's true. Mm. But
he was a non-league footballer, so it wouldn't have been on telly anyway.
Oh, good point. Fat me four times.
The UK's first cash machine was installed at Barclays Bank in Enfield. The first ever customer, Reg Varney from On the Buses.
I listened to a podcast, a competing podcast, which interviewed the man who invented the cash machine.
Oh, yeah.
His wife has never used one.
Yay.
That's a kick in the balls, isn't it?
Why not? Spite?
We know what the older generation are like. They don't trust it, innit? Go down a bank. Fat me five times?
At the Astoria Theatre in London, Jimi Hendrix set fire to his guitar on stage for the first time. He was taken to hospital suffering burns to his hands.
I loved all that. Smashing stuff up and setting it on fire, and I thought that was great.
Well, as a one-off.
I read an article in The Guardian, obviously, because no musicians can make money anymore because of freaking YouTube and Spotify and that. There was a band and they were interviewed and they said that it makes us really, really sad when we see people smashing up their instruments because we're like, no, oh, we could have used that. Oh, God. It looks so shit being young. Okay, well, Phil, fat me seven times. Seven times? Six times.
Admittedly, you probably could edit this one out. Britain got its first ever colour TV broadcasts.
Do you know what it was?
No.
Probably Countdown usually is, isn't it?
Do you want to know what number one in the charts was at the time?
Absolutely.
This.
Please release me.
Engelbert Humperdinck, Release Me, in my mind, an incredibly apt song if you were a talking supertanker that had run aground on rocks. So that, Phil, all those facts I gave you, 1967, Engelbert Humperdinck's Release Me, that is a snapshot of the mess of this nation that supertanker SS Torrey Canyon was steaming towards in March 1967 with its 30 million gallons of crude oil.
I know what oil is. Yeah. I think I know what oil is. I know what olive oil is because I'm middle class.
Mm.
I know what sunflower oil is because I don't have any money. I don't know what's crude oil?
Do you use crisp and dry?
I do not use crisp and dry.
You want an answer to what crude oil is?
I see what you mean. Sorry, I thought you were going to tell me that was what crude oil is. I was going to say,
sorry.
It's essentially 30 million gallons of crisp and dry. tell me what crude oil is, you little bastard.
Right, you want an answer to that? I give you the website investopedia.com.
Crude oil is a naturally occurring, unrefined petroleum product composed of hydrocarbon deposits and other organic materials. A type of fossil fuel, crude oil can be refined to produce usable products such as gasoline, diesel, and various other forms of petrochemicals. It is a non-renewable resource, which means that it can't be replaced naturally at the rate we consume it, and is, therefore, a limited resource.
So, like, the base ingredient from which we go off and make stuff like Vaseline and petrol.
So this is the building blocks of, like, the modern world, crude oil.
Yes.
And this is the stuff that we're not allowed to be using anymore.
Yes, that's it. We're not allowed that now.
Oh, okay.
Okay, Phil. Well, I understand all of that, and I am now a better place to take on board all you are about to tell me about this seabird murdering supertanker. Get on with it.
Right. Well, let me tell you about the tanker. SS Torrey Canyon. You say she for a tanker.
Always she for a ship.
It's always she for a ship, no matter the size. Because she for a tanker just feels a little bit, I don't know, it just feels a bit mean-spirited somehow. But anyway, she was built in the good old US of A in 1959. Now then, Phil. She originally had a capacity of 60,000 tons.
Still big.
Yeah?
Football
big. Pictures?
Oh, well.
You can't do tonnage in football pictures, can you? Fish tanks? Okay, so it was 60,000 tons to start with. However, she was later, and this is the official term, jumboized in Japan.
That's a great phrase.
Many times in my life I've been jumboized.
I am at the moment. It's all the dairy milk.
she was jumboized in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
to 120,000 tons.
Mm, that's a big ship.
Frickin' massive.
Big ship.
This made her, for a brief time, the largest tanker in the world.
Just to put that in context, the Titanic was about 48,000 tons.
Oh, bloody hell, really?
Cross-channel ferry, you see, in Dover. Yeah. About 25,000, 26,000 tons. So this is a big ship.
It's one of those things where if it starts passing you and then like half an hour later it's still passing you type ship.
Very
right?
much.
Okay. At the time of the disaster, she was owned by Barracuda Tanker Corporation.
Mm.
That sounds cool, doesn't it?
Say, was that owned by a James Bond villain?
It does sound like a James Bond. It's a hollowed out mountain. Okay, it was owned by Barracuda Tanker Corporation, a subsidiary of the Union Oil Company of California, and registered in Liberia.
Mm.
Okay, but chartered to BP.
Always BP.
Always BP.
Always comes back, doesn't it?
She was, get this, Phil,
okay,
974.4 feet.
Okay, I would probably say that's about 297 metres.
Do you know, bang
in
on.
Length. Thank you.
That is one big-ass ship.
That is a big ship. Do you want to know why she's registered in Liberia?
Yeah, why?
I couldn't tell you specifically, but I can tell you that most ships are registered places for tax reasons.
So they're like all tax havens?
Mm.
Bastards.
Most, if you look at cruise ships, most of them are registered in the Bahamas.
Oh, man.
Nassau.
Alive. So, this huge ship, Phil,
yeah,
they're only going to fill it with frickin' oil.
So, what happened on her final voyage to tarnish what I can only describe as this exceptional record of worldwide oil delivery?
The day was the 19th of February, 1967.
Right.
This 19th of February, 1967 started like any other.
Oh.
The Torrey Canyon left Kuwait, where the oil comes from.
Come from there.
With a full cargo of crude oil. The ship reached the Canary Islands on the 14th of March.
Ooh, nice.
I have just discovered that the Canary Islands are named after dogs, not birds.
Are they?
Yeah.
I've been there 8 times. I should know that, and I don't.
Well, I say I've just discovered this. It was, I overheard it on Co-op's in-house radio. So it may not be the greatest... So they reached the Canary Islands on the 14th of March.
Okay.
From there, the planned route was to Milford Haven in Wales.
Ah, big oil refinery used to be in Milford Haven.
From here, it all went a little bit wrong.
Oh.
Okay. Now, maybe relaxed by the climate of the Canary Islands or its abundant fine food, the crew made a balls up as they steered their huge vessel towards Blighty. You basically saying you reckon they were pissed? A load of pissed fishermen with a huge amount of oil, crisp and dry. This could have been nothing to do with the joys of the Canary Islands, to be fair, and a lot to do with the ship's owners giving the captain a very tight deadline to reach Milford Haven. Just like they did on the Titanic, where they made them drive too fast, isn't it?
Cost savings, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Don't do that. It's just trying to get to Wales on time.
Mm.
If the captain missed the high tide he needed to dock the ship by on the 18th of March, he would then have to have waited another 6 days.
Oh, time is money and all that.
You know what that sounds like?
Mm?
Donner party.
Yes.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
Got a very tight window. Mm. Otherwise, you're all going to end up eating your own genitals and burning your feet off in a fire. Anyway, the captain of the vessel...
Mm-hmm.
Now, his name was, Phil?
Pastrengo Ruggiati.
That's very good.
Thanks very much.
But Pastrengo Ruggiati. Pastrengo? Pastrengo? Oh. Don't collect $200?
This is the sort of humour that needs to come back. There's nothing wrong with having a laugh at other countries' accents and pronunciations. They do it to us, we do it to them, everyone's happy. This chicken's rubbery. One of the best jokes of all time.
You're going to have to get out of here. You're going to miss your 2:30 dentist appointment. Pastrengo Ruggiati set a course from the Canaries that should have taken the Torrey Canyon 5 miles to the west of the Isles of Scilly.
Okay. Right,
you been to the Scilly Isles?
Yes.
Very weird place.
Loved it though.
Very nice.
Mm.
But I feel like there's quite a lot of undiagnosed mental illness on the Scilly Isles.
The Scilly Isles.
Yeah.
Do you remember the TV show The Prisoner?
Oh, God, yeah.
It's like The Village, except everyone knows Prince Charles.
Yes. Which in itself is just mind-blowing, isn't it? At noon, Phil.
Oh, yes.
On March the 17th, Captain Ruggiati checked his position and found that he was on course.
Okay.
When he went to bed that night, he left instructions to wake him at 0600 hours, which is, Phil...
6 a.m.
6 in the morning, expecting to have the Sillies on radar somewhere off the starboard bow, which I believe is the right side.
Your right.
Of the...
vessel.
Vessel. Her right side. Instead, though, Phil, when he woke up the next morning, the Sillies appeared to be on the port bow.
Left.
Left.
Clubbing's gone wrong.
What's wrong with left and right?
You see, left and right doesn't work, does it? It depends which way you're steering. Although, quite frankly, if you're standing on the back of the ship and you're looking to your left, it's always going to be your left.
Well, I mean, one end is pointy. So if you just...
The bows.
In the theatre, you have, like, stage left and stage right, don't you? So why not have, like, it's, like, pointy end left, pointy end right? Do you mean pointy end right, lav?
They should have boat left, boat right.
Boat left, boat right. Yeah, boat left, right. Back it up, Terry. Boat left. Anyway, the next morning, the Sillies appeared to be boat left. You don't want boat left in this situation. You want solid boat right. During the night, strong currents had pushed Torrey Canyon off course, specifically to the wrong side of the Scilly Isles. Also, while the captain slept, the chief officer altered the course from 18 degrees to 12 degrees. Why, Phil?
Don't know.
Nobody knows. Is that a big... That's quite a lot, man.
Is if you're on a 120,000-ton ship carrying 31 million gallons of oil.
This is the sort of thing where it takes them about 12 days to turn round,
doesn't
it?
Yeah, they're big old beefers.
Why the fuck has he done that?
I don't know.
In shades of... Moorgate Troop disaster.
Yeah.
This has got it all. That's got it all, Phil.
That's a great one, this one.
Okay, now, Phil.
Mm.
Nearby to the islands is something called the Seven Stones Reef.
Ooh.
Put your hands on. Cue the Wikipedia music.
The Seven Stones Reef is a rocky reef, nearly 15 miles, 24 kilometres north-northwest of Land's End in Cornwall, and 7 miles, 11 kilometres, east-northeast of the Isles of Scilly. The reef consists of two groups of rocks and is nearly 2 miles, 3.2 kilometres, long, and 1 mile, 1.6 kilometres, in breadth. They rise out of the deep water and are a navigational hazard for shipping, with 71 named wrecks and an estimated 200 shipwrecks overall.
Remember Captain Ruggiati?
Mm.
He's in bed, isn't he?
Ah.
Right? And his chief officer has altered the course.
Mm.
When he awoke, he found that the ship's course was putting the Seven Stones Reef directly in his path. Mm. Iceberg, dead ahead! Right?
Okay.
Ruggiati immediately ordered a return to its original course of 18 degrees. He said, turn it back, love, to whatever it said on the dial before I went to my bedroom.
Now, remember, in the last episode, we got told off for our West Country accent, not go down that path.
That's why I've put it on again. This is not a West Country accent. It's a general seafolk accent. Is he Italian?
He sounds Italian, doesn't he?
Sounds like an Italian name. So, hey, what are you doing? Put the ship back onto the course. I said before I went into the bedroom. Okay, so basically, he's told him to put the ship back on course.
Mm.
Ruggiati, he immediately ordered a return to his original course of 18 degrees in an effort to take the ship through a deep channel between the Scilly Isles and the Seven Stones.
Makes sense.
Some fishing boats obstructed his way, I imagine because of what, Brexit?
Pilchards.
And that caused a bit of a delay in his plans. Anyway, he set an alternative course and left the supertanker on autopilot for a while. Is that all right?
I mean, I'm sure it normally would be all right. It does sound quite scary to leave a massive tanker on autopilot.
It does, yeah, especially when there's things you can bump into.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it seems like it'd be an all right thing to do in the middle of the Atlantic, but when you're quite close to Prince Charles's Island. A couple of hours later, Phil, Ruggiati switched off the autopilot, which I imagine is like an airplane. It just sort of like, it just deflated. And brought the ship round to 0 degrees, pointing directly at Greenwich. And then, by accident, switched the autopilot back on.
Bent over, his arse tweaked it.
Are they drunk? The officer on watch could clearly see that Torrey Canyon was already among the slightly submerged rocks of Seven Stones.
Ooh,
they can see rocks.
There's no way out of that.
Okay, this is now 08:4800 hours, Phil.
8:48 a.m.
10 to 9. Still groggy from only 3 hours sleep, Captain Ruggiati ordered a hard swing to port, So they all stopped drinking champagne. He said they were now onto the cheese course. So he wants something that was would complement that. But the Torrey Canyon didn't turn, Phil, because it's freaking massive. It didn't turn. Arrugiati decided there must be a problem. A quick check revealed there was no problem.
Oh.
Hey, it must be a problem. No, it's fine. There's another glass of port and some rock for. Okay, the autopilot, Phil, as we have mentioned, had mistakenly been left on and they didn't know it.
So they're trying to turn the ship round. Nothing's happening. Yeah. They can't work out why. And it's simply because the autopilot is just doing its own thing and not responding to their manual controls.
Realising the autopilot problem, the captain made a quick switch back to manual. And there was a desperate attempt to clear the reef. But it was too late, Phil.
Okay.
Torrey Canyon hit one of the seven stones called Pollard's Rock.
Mm.
Are they all named after Coronation Street characters, or is it just...
They're all named after characters from who actors in Heidi High.
It hits Sue Pollard's Rock at full speed. Tell me what happened next, Phil, immediately.
Oh, okay. A distress call brought a Dutch tug in. what are you doing tonight? I'm staying in. I'm going to have a Dutch tug in. A distress call.
The precursor to Netflix and chill.
Yeah, I'm going to have a Dutch tug in.
Hey guys, it seems like you're on the rocks there.
my abiding memory of going to Amsterdam when I was 18 years old was going in the red light district, just because you do walk there and have a look, don't you? And some bloke went,
absolutely,
hey guys, you want to come in here fucking sucking licking and dicking only 65 gilder. That phrase has stuck with me forever. Fucking sucking licking and dicking. Anyway,
that is a solid gold anecdote.
Anyway, this Dutch tug was brought in, but the rough seas made it impossible for the Dutch tug to pull alongside and do what it had to do. Plans were made then to pull the stranded tanker off the rocks at the next high tide. In preparation, the crew began pumping cargo overboard to lighten the ship, as you do. Very quickly, though, a 6 mile long slick of crude oil developed. Two British Navy ships were sent with thousands of gallons of detergent to break up the slick, but the Torrey Canyon was about to come apart and release 10 times the amount of oil that was ever been spilt into British waters. Subsequent inspection revealed that 14 of the ship's 18 cargo tanks had been holed.
Jesus Christ. So it'd been like scores along the bottom, I suppose, because if it's ripped out... Well, this is very Titanic, isn't it?
Mm.
So it's sort of... It's ripped out the bottom of all of them.
Yeah, it's obviously floundered and obviously gone along a bit before it stopped, isn't it?
Bloody hell.
Yeah. At nightfall on the 18th of March, there was another attempt to move the ship. That failed, though, and by dawn the following morning, the ship was starting to list. The seas also, Phil, were getting rougher with a 20-foot swell.
Shite.
Inside the ship, vapours from the oil were building up, just to make matters worse. Yeah. And at noon on the 19th of March, there was a terrific explosion on board the ship. Now, the good news is that a lot of the crew had already been rescued.
Yeah.
But there were 5 men left aboard. They were injured. And then a further 2 people were blown into the sea by the force of the explosion. Managed to rescue one of them, but one of them did die.
Do you know why did that happen? Why did it just blow up?
Vapours.
Yeah, but you need to have a source of ignition. You can have all the vapours you like.
Well, they're probably smoking. I don't know what that
source. Moment of ignition was. But I suppose if it's filled with vapour...
It's not going to take much.
Not going to take much, isn't it? It's a slight spark and that's going to blow up. And of course, you've got all that crude oil there, you know, and that's what, flammable, is it?
That is.
Okay.
I've heard. Right, Phil, we're now in a quandary, aren't we? You've got this enormous ship gushing thousands of tonnes of oil into the sea, but any attempt to move her is failing because she is firmly stuck on Sue Pollard's Rock. In fact, the rock had penetrated deep into the ship's hull, so she is just lying there, exposed to the elements. And of course, we said the weather was getting worse and worse, and she is spewing out her highly toxic cargo.
Shit.
Not good. Now, salvage companies, being salvage companies, seeing the moolah, they still wanted to try and tow this listing ship away. But they're in a bit of a quandary as to where to take it. Great Britain, that's us, fearful of widespread pollution, refused entry at any port for the ship.
Oh.
And now these fears were justified, though, Phil. Absolutely justified. Because within a week of the accident, oil began coming ashore at Cornwall. And there was a lot of it. In total, 31 million gallons of oil leaked from that ship.
So I can't even, I don't know what that looks like, 31 gallons.
I've never seen a gallon because it's always gone in my petrol tank. Now, on the afternoon of March the 26th, British Navy observers noted that Torrey Canyon had become humped, is the official term. The ship's back was broken and all of the oil was now spilling into the sea.
This is like as bad as it could possibly be, isn't it, really? Like, they've snapped a ship in half.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the biggest oil tankers in the world at the time.
How do you snap?
Pollard's Rock, mate.
Pollard's Rock is something else.
10 days after the accident, on the 28th of March, salvage crews conceded that the Torrey Canyon was lost. And that same day, it broke into three parts and any remaining oil poured out into the water. In effect, all of the oil.
All of the oil.
All of the oil. We all know that oil leaks in the sea aren't a very good thing, don't we, Phil?
Yeah.
And this was no exception. In fact, it was horrific. Most of the marine life in the area was killed from the south coast of Britain through the Channel Islands and onto the Normandy shores of France. That is a massive area. Over 25,000 seabirds perished, oyster beds became polluted, and the beaches of England and France were affected for up to 5 months. The affected area of the oil spill was 1,000 square kilometres, and the beaches of Cornwall were covered in a thick carpet of black goo, and if that wasn't enough, that also stank to high heaven.
Shit.
So, Phil, with all of that, what the hell do you do?
Well, the first thing you do in any crisis situation in Britain, A, have a Cobra meeting, B, get the Navy and RAF to bomb the hell out of it. That's what you do, and that's exactly what they did do.
Good.
Can you bomb oil out of the sea?
We're going to find out, I've a feeling.
Now, they didn't do it just for fun, although it does sound fun. What could be better than bombing the sea?
Imagine that. You're like Cold War, you're on alert the whole time, and you think, I'll never get to do anything. Do you want to go and bomb an oil tanker? Yes, I do.
Yes, I do. Yeah, no one's saying no to that. Okay. Now, there was some logic to bombing the oil tanker.
Oh, okay.
The logic went thusly, Philip Lucas, that the best way to solve the problem was to sink the boat.
I get that.
Sink her with bombs is the best plan they have so far.
They
right?
do that. I've seen war footage.
Really?
They do that with boats.
They do that. Mm. They send them down to the bottom to David Jones's locker. That's where they keep the old bombed boats. The bombing would also have the effect of setting fire to the surrounding oil, thus burning it away.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I get it.
Scorch the world. That was the first plan, right?
Mm.
On the 28th of March, Royal Navy Buccaneer Strike Aircraft.
Mm.
What do they look like?
They're good. Good 50s design.
Buccaneers? I mean, it couldn't be more apt. Get the Buccaneers out. Buccaneer strike aircraft set off and promptly dropped 42,000 pound bombs on the bloody sea.
That's the way to do it.
After that, the RAF flew in with their Hawker Hunters to drop cans of aviation fuel and napalm onto the oil to set it on fire.
They are just mullering this shit with everything. I'll tell you what,
this is when we knew how to do stuff, innit?
I love it.
End of the 60s, fuck it, mate. Fuck it, napalm it. I never saw anything in the 60s we couldn't napalm. Right. At the time, the Ministerial Committee on Emergencies called the procedure explosive surgery.
That's a fantastic name.
We could have bombed that cancer out of you, mate. What's that? You napalm that appendix out. The resulting fire sent up a 3-mile smoke plume that could be seen 100 miles away.
Wow. Wow. And actually, I'll tell you, you can see that on YouTube.
Can you really?
Yes, there's quite a lot of Torrey Canyon being bombed footage available.
So you could see it from frickin' miles away. Mm. A resident of the Scilly Isles said, Phil?
We had a grandstand view of those planes going over. Then there was a huge pall of horrible black smoke.
You see, the problem, Phil, was that only 23 of the 41 bombs hit the target, right? And the rest hit the sea. Because there's an awful lot more sea to hit. Now, the sea at this time was so rough that the oil slick wouldn't ignite. They couldn't set. They couldn't napalm it because there's too much water. It's putting our napalm out.
So what do they do? Give up?
No, they were undeterred. They had another go.
Yes.
This time, for good measure, they also fired rockets at the floating oil. I can imagine people leaning out of planes just fucking shooting at it with revolvers.
They are chucking everything at this, aren't they?
Set fire to it. Okay. Now they're firing rockets at the oil.
This is great.
If you're an aviation enthusiast, you can only dream about how cool it would be to witness buccaneers, hawker hunters and sea vixens going to town the huge oil tanker, just fucking shooting everything they've got into the fucking water.
I don't want to be crude, but that would make me come watching that.
I think I would respect Greta Thunberg so much more if she goes, she said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to bomb climate change. We're going to shoot climate change in the face.
Explosive surgery.
Yeah, that's right. What we're going to do is we're going to fly over the Arctic and we're going to bomb the shit out of climate change. Although, Phil, good news.
Okay.
All of this did eventually... It's amazing that they've just tried so hard to sink an already sinking ship. It did sink the ship. Well done, them. Oh. The napalm, the rockets, the bombs, the whole of it, they managed to sink a ship that was already sinking. The efforts to contain the oil by shooting them with revolvers... or by burning it, didn't really work, unfortunately. I'd be surprised they went out there with baseball bats and just started
clubbing it, clubbing the oil.
Just fucking clubbing the sea to death. Nearer the affected coastal areas and directly onto the floating oil, the government poured 10,000 tons of a BP-manufactured detergent. So they probably made a bit of money out of that, I guess. A crude first-generation dispersant it was. So fairy liquid. Essentially.
Yeah, I guess it's more...
It's the same thing, right?
Okay.
No, it is, isn't it?
I don't know.
It's literally just something that makes a oil break up.
That's not true, because when I've done the washing up and I've emptied the bowl, I've accidentally not washed a couple of spoons up. I pick them up and they're greasy.
Really?
If I've cleaned a pan as the last thing. All your cutlery goes into the bottom first. Layer the plates on top because they're flat.
Yeah.
Then you do your big greasy pans at the end.
And you find sometimes that spoons are still greasy at the bottom.
Mm.
Well, proof positive then. Anyway, they had a bash by putting fairy liquid, even though they should have rang and you could have told them it wasn't going to work. In some cases, barrels of the detergent were literally rolled off cliffs. So they went to Cornwall with huge barrels of fairy liquid and just pissed it into the sea.
Sort of in keeping with just bombing the ship, though, isn't it? It's all very similar.
Just fire fairy liquid at it. The problem with this, Phil, and you'd be amazed to find there was a problem.
Oh.
The problem with this was that the detergent proved highly toxic to marine life.
Oh, Jesus.
They don't like swimming in it, Phil, or birds don't like landing on it. BP, whose oil all of this was, it was BP's problem really, was selling the government their own detergent in industrial quantities, which was getting poured over the beaches, killing off the microorganisms which would have broken down the oil. In short, the cure was worse than the problem. So there was stuff there already that could have helped, right?
Mm.
But they put so much detergent in, they fucking killed everything. Is that right?
Yes.
So every organism that hasn't already been shot in the head by the RAF is now being drowned in fairy liquid.
Well, the very company that caused the problem in the first place.
I mean, it's a bit of a clusterfuck, isn't it?
Yes.
A recent study, Phil, showed that areas where detergent was not used recovered in 2 to 3 years, right? Areas where detergent was used, 13 to 14 years.
Wow.
It was a poor move.
That was not the best decision, was it?
I think it's probably better at your spoons than it is seabirds, because that is dog shit.
I would describe all of that as a messy balls up, Phil.
Absolutely. Now, one place that did things rather differently, though, was the Channel Islands.
Ah, oh, I love the Channel Islands.
Guernsey, Jersey, lovely. Alderney, Sark. The Channel Islands. Now, they're a bit backwards, but we love
Come,
them.
Come, no. I've never felt more at home anywhere than in Jersey.
Well, yes, that's right. And it's absolutely not connected with the fact that it's the only places where the Nazis were welcomed in with open arms. Oh, this feels like the sort of place where I belong, says Phil Lucas. And they did things different in Guernsey. 19 days after the tanker ran aground, the oil reached Guernsey's beaches.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they did not immediately go and get their rifles and shoot at it from the shore.
Which some may say is surprising.
They did that when the ferry comes in, didn't they? What they did do was scoop all the oil up and send 3,000 tons of it to a quarry on the island.
Chuck it away.
That seems better.
Seems sensible.
Okay, there was a problem though, Phil.
Oh.
Because birds used to identify the quarry as a water source and would often fly in, which led to a horrible death for those birds to get covered in oil. Mm. Still, anyway, got the oil off the beaches, I suppose.
Half a dozen and one.
And it's better than shooting at it. I mean, I can't believe I'm even saying those words. And here's the bizarre thing, or here's another bizarre thing. Mm-hmm. Some of that oil was recovered from the quarry and used for power in the 80s.
Wow.
So we used it up.
That's positive.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We used it for the 80s. All of that terrible music and shoulder pads, that was all made from...
Torrey Canyon oil.
And here's the more bizarre thing, Phil. Mm. 53 years on from the disaster, that quarry with oil from the Torrey Canyon disaster is still there.
Wow.
You can see it.
Oh, man.
Nip over to Guernsey and see a load of desiccated seabirds.
Oh.
Now, it's fair to say, Phil, that Guernsey... Mm. has done a lot with microorganisms and the like to deal with the oil in the quarry, and there's a lot less of it now.
Okay.
Now, I know what you're thinking, Phil. Mm. Sat over there.
Yeah.
You're thinking, that's all very well and good, but where does Whitney Houston fit into all this?
That's exactly what I'm thinking. There used to be, in France, a Frenchman. His name was Serge Gainsbourg.
Have you had a stroke? What's happening now? Have I had a stroke?
To sum up, Serge Gainsbourg. I am going straight to Wikipedia.
Serge Gainsbourg was a French singer, songwriter, pianist, film composer, poet, painter, screenwriter, writer, actor, and director. Regarded as the most important figure in French pop while alive, he was renowned for often provocative and scandalous releases, which caused uproar in France. Gainsbourg's varied musical style and individuality make him difficult to categorise, although his legacy has been firmly established, and he is often regarded as one of the world's most influential popular musicians.
In the 80s, when old Serge Gainsbourg had become a supreme A1 grade pisshead, he appeared as a guest on a live French talk show.
I remember this.
Yes. Now, so who was the other guest on the show?
Whitney Houston.
Yes. Live on air, naughty Mr. Gainsbourg made his desires for Whitney very clear.
He says you are great.
Oh, thank you.
I said she's a genius.
He says you are genius.
Oh, thank you.
He's genial.
Thank you very much.
Oh, no. A friend of mine.
Say it.
He says you are great. He dit vous êtes très jolie. C'est ça, en gros, ce que tu veux lui dire.
Nah. Oui. I said I want to fuck her.
Oui. Alors, je vais vous traduire. Non. Donc, he says you are great. Il dit que vous êtes très jolie. Non. C'est. Non, non. Il a dit ça, mais ça lui arrive de temps en temps. Je peux pas vous traduire ce qu'il a dit. Il a dit, j'aimerais bien vous offrir des fleurs.
Pas du tout, j'ai dit, je voudrais bien l'apaiser.
Il a dit... T'auras pas de cigarette. Non, sometimes he's a little bit drunk, you know.
Yeah,
temps
I know.
Temps,
I'm
il est...
not drunk.
He
non.
Must be.
Ah, vous... Non.
I'm not drunk
non,
today.
Non, il est normal, vous imaginez quand
Are
il est sous.
Sure?
Non, non, vous inquiétez pas, Whitney.
Are you sure you're not drunk?
Non, il est pas... Non.
I wanted to fuck her.
Yeah.
I wanted to fuck her.
Anyway, I know what you're thinking, Phil. You're thinking, thanks for that information. But what has any of this got to do with the disaster we're talking
That's
about?
That's exactly what I'm thinking.
Well, I'll give you the answer. Because shortly after the disaster, Dirty Serge Gainsbourg released a song called Torrey Canyon.
De pétrole brut, 120 000 tonnes.
Okay, a very rough translation of those lyrics would be something like, I was born in the Japanese shipyards. Indeed, I belong to the Americans. An affiliate to a shipping company, I've forgotten the address, in Los Angeles. 120,000 tons of crude oil, 120,000 tons in the Torrey Canyon.
Nice.
A bit of German, a bit of French.
The policeman from a lower low.
there you go, Phil. One of the most influential French music artists of the 20th century, Whitney Houston, the Silly Isles, and an oil slick, all neatly linked together.
Well, what about Harold Wilson? You said you told...
Yes.
You foreshadowed me a Harold Wilson fact.
Well, remember I said he was the Prime Minister at the time?
I do.
And he gave the go-ahead to bomb the Torrey Canyon.
Oh, it was his idea, was it?
which, as we know, floundered near the Scilly Isles.
Yeah.
Harold Wilson, buried on the Scilly Isles.
Oh, really?
Had a holiday home there, actually.
What a nice circular thing.
No circle left incomplete with old Uncle Phil over here.
Oh, that's lovely. Well done. Well done. So, what's the aftermath of all this bullshit?
Do you want to do that?
Yeah. The British government was strongly criticised for bombing the sea.
Never.
People thought that simply shooting at the problem was probably not the best thing to do, so they had a bit of a go at them.
Do you remember when there was an eclipse a few years back in, I think it was Cambodia, and they shot at the moon because they thought a monkey was stealing it?
I did not know that. That's awesome. Okay, so... the RAF and the Royal Navy were subject to ridicule, Phil, for good reason, as a result of their efforts to assist in resolving the matter, given that as many as 25% of the 42 bombs they dropped missed the enormous stationary target. I mean, a gigantic... How can they miss? But we have to remember something here, Phil.
Okay.
This was the first of these sorts of disasters, right? There was no precedent. And you know what human beings are like. The first time anything goes wrong... We shoot at it to see if it will help. So the government and the authorities, they were working on the hoof. Like, what should we do? Well, let's try shooting at it first, obvs. Mm. And if shooting at it doesn't work, then we'll think of something else.
There is an inherent logic to what they did if you didn't have any precedent to go from.
Yes, I guess so. You've got oil. You
sink
to get
it, burn the oil off.
Yeah, kind of makes sense, doesn't it, right? They may have shot napalm at the sea. It does look silly in hindsight, right? They may have poured thousands of gallons of deadly detergent all over Cornwall and killed everything for 13 years. But the heart was in the right place.
Exactly. You've got to look at it that way, you know?
The detergent thing to me seems fine. Because that, to me, is like, we've got to do something with it. Detergent gets rid of oil, so what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's knowledge, isn't it?
Claims, Phil, were made by the British and French governments, including Serge Gainsbourg, against the owners of the vessel.
Yeah,
and the subsequent settlement was the largest ever in marine history for an oil claim.
Oh, wow.
And the way they got to that big number, though, was superb.
Oh, okay.
It is a bit complicated, though, so stick with it.
Okay.
In traditional maritime law, Phil, the sorts of people who've nailed down boat left and boat right, these sorts of genii, ships can sue and be sued.
Get that.
You can sue the ship. You can sue her ass, right?
Get it.
But their liability is limited to the value of the ship and its cargo.
Got that.
The only money you can have is how much the ship and the shit on the ship is worth.
Right.
So, when... Captain Birdseye goes down, you can only claim for the ship and the fish fingers. The ship and the fingers is all you can go for. Okay, now, after the Torrey Canyon was wrecked, there wasn't much of it left.
No, sounds
right? it. Because they bombed it into fucking... They bombed it into next week, right? So the value of the ship was one remaining lifeboat... They dragged a lifeboat out of the sea. Is this true that it was worth about 30 quid? Yeah. So the value, they bombed it so much, it was this mega tanker was worth about 30 quid. To put that into perspective, that's 1/160,000th of the damages the UK and the French governments wanted to claim. You'd want more than a 30 quid lifeboat.
I should imagine the old oil company would be like, yeah, 30 quid. Deal.
Liberian law did not provide for the direct liability of the ship's owners.
Right.
The British government, Phil, was only able to serve a writ against the ship's owners by arresting Torrey Canyon's sister ship when she docked in Singapore 4 months after the oil spill.
Right.
So you're telling me that Britain arrested another ship?
Well, when you think about it, you know with a writ you have to physically hand it, don't you?
Yeah.
But if you've got no ship left...
Yeah.
You might as well do it to the sister ship. Because you have to hand it physically to something, don't you, to do with... I don't know, but I know you physically have to land a writ on something,
it makes it sound a little bit like they found a ship that was a bit like it and then sued it.
Well, I guess, I don't know, it must be something like it's owned by the same kind of bit. I like the theory that they just found one that looked like it.
I like the fact that we're saying they arrested the ship. A young British lawyer arrested the ship on behalf of the British government by attaching a writ to his mast. Wait, so he stapled a letter to the mast of his ship and said, I'm arresting this ship on behalf of another ship we have bombed into the ocean. He was only able to board the ship and serve the writ because the ship's crew thought he was a whiskey salesman. There was then, Phil, a Liberian board of inquiry.
Okay.
The most brutal form of inquiry. They blamed the disaster on the captain. Absolutely bang on. Hey, what's wrong? Pastrengo Ruggiati. This Liberian board of inquiry determined that his decision to steer the super tank... Sorry. I mean, it's quite cut and dried, isn't it? The Liberian Board of Inquiry. Mm-hmm. They went down Occam's razor lines, right? And they determined that Pastrengo's decision to steer the supertanker between the Scillies and the Seven Stones instead of through the sea was the main cause of the accident. He Genius. Steered it towards the rocks, lads. And that caused all sorts of difficulties for everybody involved, particularly Cornwall. But, Phil, you and I are old hands at this. We know, don't we, Phil, that disasters are usually caused by a series of events, not just drunk Italians. Sometimes there's all sorts of other things.
Sometimes sober Italians cause these problems.
That's right. They're usually caused by a series of events, which on their own probably don't lead to serious consequences.
Yeah, like when we did the Pan Am KLM Tenerife crash.
Yeah, lots of little things add up to one big mistake. Although, you know, it does seem like quite a big mistake to just steer your super tanker towards the rocks, but okay, we'll go with it. So this is actually true of the Torrey Canyon disaster as well. A report, Phil, by the Ergonomics and Safety Research Institute in the UK.
I trust them implicitly on anything.
Do you get the magazine?
Weekly.
Terribly easy to hold. the report by the Ergonomics and Safety Research Institute in the UK listed the following reasons, Phil, for the world's first major catastrophic oil spill. Number one.
Ship design. The Torrey Canyon had manoeuvrability problems, mainly a result of being jumbo-ized.
Oh, of course. They did it in Japan.
Yes.
It was Japanese fault.
Jumbo ship harder to move.
Yeah.
In coastal waters, it did not respond quickly enough to avoid the impending disaster.
You couldn't turn the fuck around. If you can't turn the thing to either boat left or boat right, you're going to smash it into some rocks.
So basic.
Reason two.
Autopilot design. Lever placement on this particular model could be confusing, and in this particular case led to the wrong control mode being selected.
What you want, I guess, is on off.
Yeah.
Reason three.
Competence. The captain made a bad decision steering the Torrey Canyon between the Scillies and the Seven Stones, didn't he?
Deafers.
Definitely. And the first officer made ill-advised course corrections while the captain was sleeping.
Reason four.
Time pressures. Safe course alternatives were discarded because of the pressure to arrive in port by Milford Haven at high tide on March the 18th, thus avoiding having to wait 6 days and causing them to spend more money.
The old Titanic problem. What a catalogue of unmitigated horrors that was, Phil.
Wasn't it?
Did anything good come from any of this?
Yes, Phil. There were some good things that came of this. As is often the case with these things, it takes a disaster to change the rules in such a way that it helps prevent these things happening in the future.
Absolutely.
Now, although we have had oil slicks since the Torrey Canyon, some of the procedures that were put in place after this disaster have probably minimised the ones the potential problems we've had since. Much was learned from the Torrey Canyon. One, it is clear now that oil dispersants laden with detergents exacerbate the damage. Nature does a better job. The severity of the disaster led to ship owners becoming strictly liable rather than liable only through proven negligence.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
We've had a few of this, haven't we? Corporate responsibility sort of thing.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Environmental protection laws requiring new ship designs were adopted. This culminated in double hull requirements for newly built oil tankers.
Seems good to me.
Yeah, makes sense. Double hull.
Yeah.
Better equipment was fitted to oil tankers afterwards to help with such things as oil discharge monitoring, filter systems, slop tanks, sludge tanks, piping, pumping arrangements. Complicated stuff, but useful stuff.
Engineering.
Exactly. Also, Phil, this disaster has been important in another way.
Serge Gainsbourg?
The Turkanian. Some folk draw a direct line between the incident and the creation in 1970 of the government's Environment Department.
Oh.
Incidentally, the first ever Department of Environment in the world.
Oh, really?
Yeah, people slag us off, but we ain't bad. Right. This incident is also credited with sparking the first big rush of environmental volunteering. What you said, cleaning up your seabirds and the like.
People taking their toothbrushes down to the seaside and cleaning off a rock and that.
Exactly. Yeah, people, after this disaster, travelled all over the UK to help the clean-up operation.
Yeah.
You know, so that's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
The Torrey Canyon also made household names of some environmentalists, including a Durham University botany and ecology lecturer called David Bellamy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so think about it, Phil. No Torrey Canyon.
Yeah.
No Grapple Me Grape Nuts. No Lenny Henry.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I think, Phil, that apart from telling you that the wreck of the Torrey Canyon now lies at a depth of 30 metres, 98 feet under the sea, I think linking all of that to Lenny Henry is an incredibly fitting place to end.
So that was the, in the end, absolutely freaking stonking story of the Torrey Canyon. I fucking loved that one. That was awesome. Well done, us. What a good one. I mean, I think I know the answer to this, as usual. Was it God's fault or our fault, Phil Lucas?
It was the naughty captain's fault and the bloke who changed course of the ship whilst the naughty captain slept, and the company who owned the oil tanker for making him speed up to get to Milford Haven.
So death is our fault, and properly not God's fault, because if we'd just left it, God would have sorted it out and it'd been all right.
Yeah.
So there you go. Thank you so much for listening to this, the God knows how many, which episode. You put something up on the social medias the other day saying we've been going 3 years.
Which surprised me.
It may have been because we haven't. We haven't been going 3 years.
No, but we used to do another podcast.
Oh, it's the whole thing together,
and
is it?
That Twitter account was up 3 years ago. And then when we did a new podcast, all we do is change the names.
Changed it over. So that means that you and me have been, we have been talking bollocks to each other in this little room for 3 fucking years.
Too much.
Jesus Christ. So thank you so much for listening to us for the last 3 years in whatever iteration of the podcast you've been listening to. If there aren't that many Ultimate Scrutiny listeners still with us. I think there's a few, isn't there?
There might be a few, yeah.
There might be a few.
Halcyon days.
It has occurred to me to stick all of Ultimate Scrutiny up on a Patreon account, maybe. But you're probably against that, are you?
Don't mind.
Yeah.
I don't care.
If you fancy listening to all of the old Ultimate Scrutinies and you think that maybe we could do that, then ask us. Yeah. I'm not going to do it if you don't ask. To be fair. Do it even if you do ask.
Do you have a minimum number of requests?
Yes, absolutely. What would you want to set? 10?
Yeah, I think it would have to be 10, wouldn't it?
10. Yeah. Double figures. If double figures of you want to listen to the old bullshit and behind a paywall, I'm thinking the answer to this is going to be no, isn't it?
The trouble is, you and I cannot be bothered to set up a paywall.
I thought we had a paywall.
Oh, I got rid of that.
Oh, did you? Oh, you have to set up a new paywall. Mm. I mean, there is advertising at the start and end of this this podcast. It always makes me laugh when I listen to it because the advertising revenue is tiny. Who be listening
Who
to
wants
this?
To be associated with us?
Do you know what I mean?
No one.
Yeah, no one's gonna. Maybe BP. Maybe we get some good BP money in.
We didn't slag them off, did we?
Didn't slag them off, did we?
Not really.
The evil bastards. yes, so we've had some lovely reviews, haven't we, since the last podcast. Last podcast went down phenomenally well.
Yes,
the Bristol Channel.
Thank you very much for listening. We did get a little bit of slagging off for our Bristolian accents.
I didn't understand that, though, because I thought they was bang on.
All in jest, we love Bristol and all other places in the UK. We got a review from Kev Blokey. He said, Phil and Phil, can't remember which is which. I like that.
It's very easy. I'm Phil.
Yeah, and I'm Phil. Take us through various catastrophes, both well known and not so commonly so. Delivered in a way that is informative, amusing, normally where appropriate, and compassionate, again, normally where appropriate. And when I say compassionate, this is normally where Phil J responds with, fucking hell. I think that counts as compassion.
He does know us apart.
Yeah, good point. Great work, Phil and Phil. Carry on what you're doing. Thank you very much, Kev Blokey.
We also got a lovely review from Ben Thurston.
Oh.
God bless you, Ben. Interesting and funny. 5 stars.
Oh, Ben Thurston. Nice.
Really enjoy the podcast. Funny. appropriately sensitive at times and always really interesting. Thank you so much, Ben Thurston.
Thank you. We'd also like to thank the people in our special relationship, the Americans across the sea in the ocean by the US of A. We can never... We only occasionally see iTunes reviews from on the American site, and we have no way, or certainly have no knowledge, of how to respond to them. But thank you very, very much indeed. We had some really nice ones from Americans, which is amazing to think that anyone outside of this grimy little country listens to us. So thank you very, very much indeed.
It's a good point, succinctly put. Follow us on Twitter. We're at CBWallop. Don't follow us on Instagram. Don't follow us on Facebook. Well, you can follow us on Facebook.
I genuinely guess. Took our Instagram account off my phone the other day.
Oh, did
day.
You?
I
oh,
thought,
cool.
Can't remember the login.
No, it's gone.
No point in having
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's gone. Thank you so much for listening. Phil, anything?
No, I should stop packing my bag, shouldn't I?
It's a bit rude. A bit rude when we're still physically recording. So thank you so much for listening. We will see you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.